So who wrote this song, Jaya Radha Madhava? Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So we're very fortunate. Some of us have been chanting this song for 30 plus years now, going on 40 years. So every day we get an opportunity to actually enter into the spirit of this song. It is so beautiful in its simplicity, but it's so deep if you actually take the time to enter into it. So before we, I put one Bhagavad Gita verse on the board, you'll understand why when we get to it. But before we do that, I just wanted to go over the song because practically every day we're reciting it. So Jaya Radha Madhava, what does that mean? All glory to the divine couple, Radha and Madhava, which is the name of Krishna. Gopi Jana Vallabha, what does that mean? I'm sorry, we jumped ahead. Jaya Radha Madhava, Kunja Bihari. Kunja Bihari, what does that mean? Yes, well, our bhakti here is very eager. Kunja Bihari, what does that mean? Kunja is like a little forest grove. And Bihari means enjoyer. So Krishna, it's the name of Krishna, means he's enjoying pastimes in these little forest groves that are scattered throughout Vrindavan. Many of us have been to Vrindavan, right? Most of us in the room, I think, have been to Vrindavan. So still, even 5,000 years later, the atmosphere is like that. There are these little groves here, little groves there. It's not just like one big thick forest. You have little groves of trees, little groves, some open space like that. So Krishna had the habit of meeting his friends and enjoying in these little groves around Vrindavan. So Radha Madhava Kunjami. Go then, Gopi Jana Vallabha. What does that mean? Gopis, right? Gopi Jana means people. Vallabha, the lover. Krishna is the lover of these gopis of Vrindavan. This is one of the specific features of Krishna in his original form. Krishna expands into unlimited forms, but not, you don't hear of Lord Nrisimhadev having gopis that he's loving, or Varaha or Kurma. No. So this business of having loving pastimes with the gopis is limited to Krishna, and Balaram also has his gopis. Giri Varadhari, everybody knows that. Giri means hill. Vara means great. Dhari means the holder. So he's holding up the great hill, which is Govardhan, which is that great hill. Radha Madhava Kunja, Gopi Jana Giri Varadhari. Yashoda Nandana, very obvious, is the darling son of Mother Yashoda. Braja Jana Ranjana. Again, this word Jana. So Braja Jana means the people of Braj, means residents of Vrindavan. And Ranjana means he's giving pleasure, he's delighting them at every moment. How do they take pleasure from Krishna? By remembering him. So we can also do that. Everybody can be a Braja Jana if we adopt this method of remembering Krishna at every moment, of discussing Krishna, remembering Krishna book. I have said this story quite a few times, but I was kind of amazed. I think it was 1995. I was in Vrindavan, and His Holiness Prahladananda Maharaj was there, and we just happened to be doing some parikrama together. And at that point, I don't know if he still knows, but at that point, he had recited verbatim chapter after chapter of Krishna book. So it was so nice. We're walking along in Braj, doing parikrama, and he's reciting Krishna book. It was so wonderful. So again, every one of us can at least make that attempt. We may not have such memory to memorize verbatim every single word of every chapter of Krishna book, but we can try. We can try. Otherwise, what are we trying if we're not trying that? So, Yashoda Nandana, Brajana. Yamuna Tira, Vanachari. So, Yamuna, river is there. And Krishna, he would take pleasure, again, in playing amongst the groves on the banks of the river of Yamuna. So, Yamuna doesn't look anymore like she did 5,000 years ago, but still, it's there. So, when we go to Vrindavan, or even if we don't make it to Vrindavan, the thing is, Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. It's not just a place. It's not that if we go to Vrindavan 108 times, then we'll see Krishna. It's not like that. It's by our internal cultivation of Krishna consciousness, by memorizing all these wonderful pastimes of Krishna and sharing them. So this is, again, one of the things we'll discuss about Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that he was always in the mood of sharing Krishna consciousness, not just enjoying Krishna consciousness for himself, but sharing it. Okay, so we're going to recite this word on the board. It's from the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Adharmam dharmam iti ya manyate Tamasavritta Sarvartan Viparitangs Cha Buddhi Sa Partha Tamasi Hadharmam Dharma Mitya Manyate Tamasavritta Sarvartan Viparitangs Cha Buddhi sa parta tamasi adharmam dharma mittiya manyate tamasavrita sarvartam viparitangsa buddhi sa parta tamasi adharmam dharma mittiya Manyate tamasavrita sarvartan viparitangsha buddhi sa partha tamasi. Please chant. Sarvartan viparitangsha Buddhi sa partha tamasi. Adharmam dharma mittiya. Manyate tamasavrita. Sarvartam viparitangsha. Buddhi sa partha tamasi. Ladies. Adharmam dharma mittiya manyate samasavrita sarvartan viparitangsha buddhi sa partha tamasi. Adharmam dharma mittiya manyate tamasavrita Sarvartan viparitangsha buddhi sa partha tamasi. So word meanings adharmam, irreligion. Dharmam, religion. Iti, thus. Ya, which. Manyate, thinks. Tamasa, by illusion. Avrita, covered. Sarva artan, all things. Viparitan, in the wrong direction. Cha, also. Buddhi, intelligence. Sa, that. Partha, O son of Pritha. Tamasi, in the mode of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada's translation for this verse. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Please repeat. That understanding which considers irreligion to be religion and religion to be irreligion under the spell of illusion and darkness and strives always in the wrong direction, O Partha, is in the mode of ignorance. Srila Prabhupada wrote a very short purport to this verse. Intelligence in the mode of ignorance is always working the opposite of the way it should. It accepts religions which are not actually religions and rejects actual religion. Men in ignorance understand a great soul to be a common man and accept a common man as a great soul. They think truth to be untruth and accept untruth as truth. In all activities, they simply take the wrong path. Therefore, their intelligence is in the mode of ignorance. So, the reason I chose this verse is because this was kind of the situation when Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur appeared in this world. The real religious principles, Varnashram Dharma, Sanatam Dharma, as steeped or presented by the Vaishnav tradition was being looked on as irreligion from two camps and for two reasons. One camp was that the practice of Vaishnavism had kind of waned, and many people, Sahajas, were practicing a form of Vaishnavism that was rightfully seen as being debauchery. In other words, our tendency in this material world as conditioned soul is to imitate Krishna. And we carry that up to the utmost point of Krishna's manifestation or presentation of his parakiya rasa, is enjoying dancing with unmarried women or women that were already married to other men. In the spiritual realm, Prabhupada stated many times, this is the highest form of pleasure. But when we imitate that on the material stage, it becomes the lowest, most abominable type of practice. So some people were doing this in the name of Vaishnavism, and rightfully, those who were morally upright Hindus at the time, they looked down on this as being irreligious. And the other camp was that the British, when they came to India, because the British saw themselves as being the, you know, rightful leaders of the entire planet, and so they were conquering different countries around the world. And when they came to India, they actually encountered a civilization on all fronts, all sides, that was much more advanced than theirs. Science, mathematics, astrology, astronomy, and religious philosophy that they found in India were much more advanced than their own. So the only way they could justify conquering India and so-called civilizing the Indians was to disparage and to discount anything that they found there. So they systematically trained up a class of so-called intelligent Indians that were educated by the British. Prabhupada himself went to Scottish Church's College to learn, to study. So they systematically tried to teach the so-called advanced and educated Indians that their culture that they had inherited, that had been handed down for thousands of years, was actually bogus and not correct. So from these two angles of vision, Vaishnavism had been discounted, looked upon as being irreligion, as this first states, that those who are in the mode of ignorance, they see real religion to be irreligion. And that what the British were practicing, they were systematically taught that this was real religion. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur had a very difficult task to set the boat aright, so to speak, to turn things around. Once one of our godbrothers asked Srila Prabhupada that, why did Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur say that his work was unfinished when he left this world? And Prabhupada said, he's Vaishnava, he's all powerful, he could have done it all, but he left something for us to do. Just to give us an opportunity to do devotional service. So, on this day we can meditate on Bhaktivinoda Thakur in this light, that his mission was to set the boat aright, to let people know that the teachings of Lord Chaitanya were real religion. This is real religion. As you know, he took the trouble of writing many books, even though he was a householder and engaged in working as a magistrate under the British. And one of those books he wrote was Lord Chaitanya, His Life and Precepts. And that book was actually sent around the world to various libraries. And one of Prabhupada's disciples discovered it in a library in Canada. So we're going to take the time now to just read this synopsis of his life that was written by Chaitanya back in 1970 or 72, I think. We'll see at the end. So it's entitled A Glimpse into the Life of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. It's just a few pages that appears in as part of the introduction to the songbook, Songs of the Vaishnava Acharyas. Thakur Bhaktivinoda led a life of incessant labor and activity for Sri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He effected such immense good in the world that his work is only to be compared with the unbounded works of Sri Chaitanya himself and the Goswamis. It was the spiritual attempts and divine writings of this individual that turned the scale and led the intelligent and educated community to believe in the noble precepts and teachings of Lord Chaitanya. If we look back one century, actually it's more than a century now that we're in, it's 2010, so it's a century plus, we cannot but be astonished to find how degraded was the condition of the Vaishnava faith which had its pure origin in the deep and majestic spiritual philosophy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even vastly learned pundits could not fathom the super excellent precepts of Lord Chaitanya's philosophy. Yet due to incredulity born of the ignorance of uncultured men, the Vaishnava faith had been degraded and was considered a beggar's excuse for living at the expense of society. It was by sheer love for the Godhead that Thakur Bhaktivinod expounded the deep philosophy which had remained concealed in the pages of the Vedas and the Upanishads, the Puranas and the Bhagavatam. By his action toward divine service, and also by his words set in simple language to be easily understood by readers in general, he has given this philosophy to the world. It is his writings and his divine unparalleled character that have helped to produce a class of educated and enlightened men who are now proud of their Vaishnava faith and of their acquisition of the spiritual knowledge of the pure and sublime philosophy of Krishna, on which the stern teachings of Sri Chaitanya are based. Though born in opulent circumstances, on September 2, 1838, Thakur Bhaktivinod, who was given the name Kedarnath Dutta, had to meet many difficulties in his early life. His childhood was spent at his maternal grandfather's house at Birnagar, Ulagram, from where he came to Calcutta at the age of 13 after the death of his father. After he completed his education, he was requested to be present at the time of his paternal grandfather's death. His grandfather, Rajawallabha Dutta, had been a famous personality of Calcutta and had retired to a lonely place in Orissa to spend his last days as an ascetic. He could predict the future and knew when he would die, since he could commune with supernatural beings. Thakur Bhaktivinod was present at the eventful time when that great soul passed away, and after receiving his grandfather's instructions, he visited all of the major temples and ashrams of the state of Orissa. Bhaktivinoda Thakur then entered the educational service and introduced English education into the state of Orissa for the first time. He wrote a small book about all the ashrams of the state and mentioned an ashram which was on his ancestor's property. Quote, "I have a small village, Choti Mangalpur, in the country of Orissa, of which I am the proprietor." He wrote, "In that village is a religious house which was granted by my predecessors to the holy man as a holding of rent-free land. The head of the institution entirely gave up entertaining such men as chanced to seek shelter on a rainy night. This came to my notice, and I administered a severe threat that his lands would be cruelly resumed if in the future complaints of inhospitality were brought to my knowledge." End of quote. Bhaktivinoda Thakur later took to the government service and was transferred to Bengal. In one town, he gave a historic speech on the Srimad Bhagavatam, which attracted the attention of thousands. He made the world know what hidden treasures pervade every page of the Bhagavatam, which should be read by all persons having a philosophical turn of mind. He was transferred some years later to a town called Champaran. In this town, there was a Brahmadaitya living in a great banyan tree, and he was being worshipped by many degraded people. Parenthetically, a Brahmadaitya is a type of ghost. One day, the father of a famous girl scholar came to Bhaktivinoda for alms, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur at once employed him in reading the Bhagavatam under the shade of the banyan tree, which was the abode of the ghost. After 1 month, the Bhagavatam was completed, and then and there the tree crashed to the ground and the ghost was gone for good. Everyone was thankful for this act, except the few dishonest persons who were worshipping the ghost. So, from the story we know, there are ghosts, there are such things, many of us have experienced ourselves. But here the antidote, the remedy is given, or at least one remedy, which is to recite Srimad Bhagavatam in a place where ghosts are bothering devotees. Just recite Srimad Bhagavatam nonstop, and the ghosts will go away. Bhaktivinoda's next move was to Puri. The government commissioner was much pleased to get him in his division, and he asked him to watch the affairs of the temple of Jagannath on behalf of the government. It was through Bhaktivinoda's exertions that many malpractices were checked, and the time for the offering of foods before the deity was regulated to its extreme punctuality. So Srila Prabhupada said there are two things that are absolutely essential in deity worship. One is summit cleanliness, and the other one is punctuality. So pujaris should always remember that. We're dealing with Krishna, so we should be extremely punctual and extremely clean. Thakur Bhaktivinoda was especially entrusted to quell the rise against the government of one Vishikishena, who declared himself to be an incarnation of Mahavishnu. During the course of his investigation, Thakur Bhaktivinoda found him to be a hoax and a culprit, and charged him with transgressing government injunctions. After his trial, the fellow was sentenced to imprisonment for a year and a half, but he died shortly after in jail. This man was really possessed of unnatural powers, but as they were the outcome of non-spiritual practices, he had to submit to the Thakur when the latter wanted him to do so. Vishikishena was held in dread by the common people, and everyone warned Srila Bhaktivinoda not to admonish him even for the sake of justice, in view of the serious consequences that the yogi would inflict. But although the Thakur was not a man of ostentation and did not allow people to know his true qualities and spiritual strength, he easily cut down the demoniac power of the impostor. With the fall of Vishikishena, there arose an impostor Balaram at another village, and there were also other so-called incarnations of God, but their plans were similarly frustrated. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So Srila Prabhupada, following in his line, also did this. He directly and indirectly cut down a lot of these, all of these so-called gods that kept coming over from India. From the time of Prabhupada and forward, so many gods were coming all the time, saying that they were God and they would teach us how to become God ourselves. And of course, this is attractive because that's why we're here. We want to be God. But Prabhupada just pulled the rug out from all of them by pointing out, what kind of God are you when you have a toothache, you have to go to the dentist? What kind of God are you? You can't even cure your own toothache. So Prabhupada just so easily pulled out the rug from all these imposters and awakened us to the fact that, yes, you cannot become God. If you're not God now, you cannot become God. God never becomes God, Prabhupada said. God is always God. Just a simple way of defeating these rascals. During his stay at Jagannath Puri, Thakur Bhaktivinoda devoted much of his time to the discussion of spiritual works and prepared notes on the Vedanta Sutras, which were published with the commentaries of Baladeva Vidyabhushan. He also composed the Kalyana Kalpataru, from which Vibhavari Shesha, one selection, appears in this book. This may very truly be termed an immortal work, and it stands on the same level as the divine writings of Narottam Das Thakur. In 1877, he left Puri on government service, and in 1881, he started a well-known spiritual journal called the Sajana Toshini, The Satisfaction of Pure Devotees. He also published the Sri Krishna Sanghita, which revealed to the world the underlying philosophy explaining the spiritual existence of Krishna. This book opened the eyes of educated people to teach them their true relationship with God. It also attracted the admiration of many German scholars, for although the public regarded Krishna as a poetic creation of erotic nature, Srila Bhaktivinoda revealed Krishna as Parabrahman, the supreme transcendental person, the absolute being on the basis of Vedic evidence. At the close of his stay at the village of Narayal, he visited Vrindavan. There he had to encounter a band of dacoits known as Kanjaras. These powerful bandits spread all over the roads surrounding the holy place and used to attack innocent pilgrims. This is still going on in the Vrindavan area. I remember in so many visits, I have to kind of sort them out. I think this was 91. We were doing, again, Govardhan Parikrama. So it was bus. We would take a bus to different places and then walk around. And in one place, one evening, we were totally surrounded by this gang of dacoits. And they wouldn't let the bus move, not an inch, until they collected sufficient Lakshmi from devotees on the bus. So this is how devious these persons are. Here they are in the holy place. They could be absorbing themselves in Krishna's pastimes, but their only business is to shake down the pilgrims that come to visit the holy places. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur brought this news to the government, and after many months of struggle, extirpated the bandits from Vrindavan forever. Not exactly forever, they came back. From this time on, Thakur Bhaktivinoda preached extensively in large gatherings, explaining all of the precepts of the Sankirtan of the holy names, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. As we know, one of the books that he wrote was this Sri Harinam Chintamani, which goes into great depth into the power of the Hare Krishna mantra and how to chant it properly, avoiding offenses. While staying at Barasat, Thakur Bhaktivinoda met the famous Bengali writer Bankimchandra. This novelist and playwright had just finished writing a book on Krishna, and knowing Srila Bhaktivinoda to be an authority on topics of Krishna, he gave the manuscript to Bhaktivinoda Thakur to see. It was full of mundane, Western stylized speculations and ideas. But after 4 days of discussion, Bhaktivinoda had the whole text revised by Bankimchandra to accommodate the pure, supramundane precepts of Lord Chaitanya. During his last year at Bharasat, Bhaktivinoda was requested by a noted high court judge to publish an authoritative edition of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita with the commentaries of Sri Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as well as his own Bhaktivinoda's translation. The preface, written by Bankimchandra, expressed his gratitude to the Thakur for his endeavor, and when it was published, the copies were soon exhausted. Then Thakur Bhaktivinoda published a unique work entitled Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita, the Nectarian Teachings of Lord Chaitanya, which dealt with Lord Chaitanya's theistic philosophy and the philosophies of the Western speculators. This book defeats every other philosophy point for point and establishes the philosophy of Lord Chaitanya as supreme. In 1885, he started a society named Sri Vishwa Vaishnava Raja Sabha for the propagation of pure Hari Bhakti. Many eminent citizens of Calcutta joined the society and several committees were organized with assigned duties. So just see the energy of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, non-stop spreading Krishna consciousness, working to support his family and organizing these different societies to do more propagation of pure Hari Bhakti. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was so anxious to see the land of Lord Chaitanya that he applied many times for a transfer to any town nearby. Upon not receiving the desired transfer, he formally submitted a resignation from public service, but it was refused. Then, to his great rejoicing, he obtained a transfer to Krishnanagar, 25 miles from Navadvip, Mayapur. Once stationed at a place near Navadvip, he did not let a single free moment pass without visiting the land of Navadvip. He at once made inquiries about the exact whereabouts of the different places of Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. He soon discovered that the dense city of Navadvip was a town of only 100 years standing, so he was curious to locate the actual birthplace of Lord Chaitanya. He was convinced that the town of Navadvip was not the authentic location, and he at once commenced a vigorous inquiry to find the truth of the matter. But he could not easily escape from the people who tried to make him believe that the birthplace of Chaitanya was at that town. Then, after careful inquiry, he was told that the site was lost under the shifting course of the Ganges. Not satisfied with this explanation, he himself set out to discover the Yogpeet birthplace. After great difficulties, he came to know of a place which was being adored by many realized souls as the true birthplace of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and which was then in the possession of the Mohammedans. Local inquiry and corroborative evidence from ancient maps of the latter part of the 18th century, which showed the name Sri Mayapur, at last helped him to discover the real site of the birthplace. The discovery led to the publishing of a valuable work called Navadvip Dham Mahatmya. Who's read that book? It's a really wonderful book. Very, very informative. Chapter 5 of this book has appeared in ISKCON's Bengali Back to Godhead magazine. The year 1895 was the most eventful year in the history of the Vaishnav world, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a prime mover of the events. It was in this year that he officially memorialized the birth site of Sri Chaitanya and brought its true identity and importance before the public eye. Thousands of visitors were present at a function held at the spot. So we know the story of how he found a place where he thought was the right site. He went to Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj to get his confirmation. And when he brought Jagannath Das Babaji to the place, at that point he was, some estimate to be about 127, 130 years old. And his eyelids had become so droopy that they covered his eyes, and he couldn't see without like picking up his eyelids manually. So people considered him to be blind, but it's just that his lids were covered. And he was invalid, so he couldn't travel on his own. So they put him in a palanquin in a basket and brought him to the place. And when he got there, he jumped out of the basket and started dancing, which confirmed to Bhaktivinoda Thakur that that was the actual yogpita. Let's see. Just after retiring from government service, Thakur Bhaktivinoda himself, in a spirit of perfect humility and with a view to giving a firm standing to the discovery, went from door to door to raise funds for a temple. In the Amrita Bazar Patrika newspaper on December 6, 1894, the following article appeared, quote, Babu Kedarnath Dutta, the distinguished deputy magistrate, who has just retired from the service, is one of the most active members. Indeed, Babu Kedarnath Dutta has been deputed by his committee to raise subscriptions in Calcutta and elsewhere, and is determined to go from house to house if necessary and beg a rupee from each Hindu gentleman for the noble purpose. If Babu Kedarnath Dutta sticks to his resolution of going around with a bag in hand, we hope that no Hindu gentleman whose house may be honored by the presence of such a devout bhakta as Babu Kedarnath will send him away without contributing his mite, however humble it may be, to the Gaura Vishnu Priya Temple Fund. So, again, being Acharya setting the example that devotees should be willing and ready to go door to door for spreading Krishna consciousness. Of course, he was at that time operating in the Hindu society of the day, which still had some remnants of Vaishnava culture, so it may not be as difficult as it is today to go door to door, but still, we're meant to take that up. Truly, Thakur Bhaktivinoda honored the houses of many persons for the fulfillment of the noble object he had undertaken. He went to persons to whom he would not have gone for any purpose but for this mission of Lord Chaitanya, and his efforts were not fruitless, since the sum collected contributed to the construction of a building on the holy site of Lord Chaitanya's appearance. So I can't confirm absolutely, but I think the current building that's at the Yogpit is the one that was constructed with these funds. It may have been renovated from time to time, but I think this building that's there now goes back to the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Let's see. The work of preaching the holy name was also in full swing, and it spread fast into the distant corners of the globe. The Gauranga Smarana Mangala Stotra, with a preface in English containing the life and precepts of Sri Chaitanya, came out from Bhaktivinoda's pen soon after the discovery of Lord Chaitanya's birthplace and found its place in all the learned institutions of both hemispheres. The more the names of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Krishna were preached, the merrier was Thakur Bhaktivinoda. He therefore made annotations of Sri Brahma Sangita and Sri Krishna Karnamrita, and gave to the world his immortal and precious works, Sri Harinam Chintamani and Bhajana Rahasya. He also edited with commentary Srimad Bhagavatarka Marichi Mala, which contains all the most prominent shlokas of the Srimad Bhagavatam pertaining to the Vaishnava philosophy. His pen never tired, and it produced many other Vaishnava philosophical works. He would begin his writings very late at night after completing his government work and stay up until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning composing songs and literatures. Most of his works appeared in the Sajana Toshani magazine. He was equally engaged in writing and preaching the holy name in many districts of Bengal. His personal appearances at villages had marvelous effects on the people. To maintain the center at Nadia, he built a house at Sri Godrumadweep, which is called Sri Swananda Sukhada Kunja. Many of us have visited that place. Here in this abode, the preaching of Harinam continued in full swing. It was at the beginning of the 20th century that he chose to live at Puri and build a house on the beachfront there. Many honest souls sought his blessings and readily obtained them when he accepted the renounced order of life by taking Babaji initiation from Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji in 1908. Though he was leading the life of a renowned soul, he could not avoid the men of all description who constantly visited him. All of them received oceans of spiritual training, instructions, and blessings. In 1910, he shut himself up and remained in a perfect state of samadhi, or full concentration, on the eternal pastimes of the Lord. In 1914, he passed on to the blissful realm of Goloka on the day which is observed as the disappearance day of Sri Gadadhar. Here we quote a stanza written about the samadhi of Haridas Thakur, which Srila Bhaktivinoda wrote sometime in 1871 to explain what influence a Vaishnava carries in this world even after his departure. We all know it. He reasons ill who tells that Vaishnavas die when thou art living still and sound. The Vaishnavas die to live, and living try to spread the holy name around. Srila Bhaktivinoda predicted, quote, "Soon there will appear a personality who will preach the holy name of Hari all over the world." End of quote. It is clearly understood that His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada is that personality. I offer my prostrated obeisances first unto all the devotees that have surrendered unto His Divine Lotus Feet, and next unto the devotees who will in the future take shelter of His Lotus Feet, and I then offer my humble obeisances unto His Lotus Feet again and again. May He bless this first translation attempt so that it may be accepted by the Lord Sri Krishna, and may He engage me in the service of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, Lord Chaitanya and Radharani. So this is Achyutananda Swami and Achyutananda Prabhu at this point, wrapping up this presentation, brief presentation, a glimpse into the life of Thakur Bhaktivinoda. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai. So since there's no breakfast, we can take just a few more minutes. If there's anyone who would like to maybe recite some favorite pastime or activity of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'd just like to point out that it's notable that the great souls, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, they still exhibit this adherence to sadhana. His sadhana was very strict, as we heard. Every day he would write at a particular time. And that was because he would get up at a particular time and he would perform his daily duties, chant his japa, take his prasadam, go to work, come home for lunch, go back to work. And he was so efficient in his government service that he would do so much work that the other magistrates would be jealous, envious of how quickly he would do his work. In other words, he didn't waste any time at work. Nowadays, wasting time at work is practically de rigueur. Everybody does it. Most businesses nowadays, they have to cut off access to, you know, Facebook and YouTube and all that, because otherwise people just sit at their desk and they pretend to be working. Meanwhile, they're just watching YouTube videos and checking on their Facebook. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was not that kind of employee. When he went to work, seriously. He would sit there and just dispose of case after case after case so quickly that the other magistrates were envious, because they were not as fast. So the point I'm trying to make is that it is not necessarily a sign of advancement, because some people present this, that, you know, when you advance and you don't have to be so strict in your sadhana, you can, you know, slack off and do this. But no, we see so many great souls like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, very strict sadhana, extremely strict. So strict that most of us can't imagine eating the same amount at the same time every day, which is very, very wonderful, because it makes the body extremely regulated. I'm not so regulated at this point, but I know at certain points of my Krishna conscious career I have been so regulated. I remember in the 70s here in New Dwarka, because the ashram, the ashram is where the store is now, and it was like literally we were sleeping like sardines, elbow to elbow. So you can imagine, there was like one bathroom facility up there with a couple of stalls and a couple of showers. So if you didn't get up early, you didn't make it to Mangal Arati. So I used to go to bed like at 10 o'clock, get up at 3, and take my shower, take care of the body, take the shower, and just be out there chanting. Because if you didn't do that, if you waited to get up at like 4 or 4:15, you didn't make it to Mangal Arati, because that's when the mass of the devotees got up. And especially during that marathon, when Prabhupada put us through that 2-month marathon of producing 17 volumes, then it was essential. You literally had to like be like a clock, fall asleep at a certain time, get up at a certain time, chant your rounds, and then the rest of the day was at the BBT, just working hard. So again, the point is that, you know, being highly regulated, especially brahmachari life, means to be highly regulated so that one can just spend the whole day serving a spiritual master. And in the said, I don't remember exactly where I read it, but there's a statement that the brahmachari should have absolutely no trouble falling asleep, because you've worked so hard for the spiritual master all day. As soon as you put your head down, boom, you're out like a light. gone. No trouble. If a brahmachari is having insomnia, there's something wrong there. Something is not right with his practice of Krishna consciousness. Because if you're really adhering to brahmachari standards, you should rise at the same time, chant your rounds at the same time, eat at the same time, and then the rest of the day just work hard for the spiritual master. And when it's time to go to bed, boom, you're gone. No trouble sleeping. So, anybody want to say a few words about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Any pastimes you want to recall? Maybe somebody can get the microphone. Pass it around. Suhas Prabhu.
I always thought that it was very impressive and incredible that in relationship to Krishna consciousness, there's a very strong connotation towards renunciation. And it seems that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you saw him externally, you wouldn't necessarily believe that. Because if you take a look at his portrait here, he was a very healthy person. And at the same time, also he had 11 children, which is really uncommon in terms of renunciation. And so it's very interesting to note that he kind of was extraordinary, and he probably really exhibited more true renunciation than a normal individual. Because even though he had 11 children, they were all pure devotees of the Lord by his association. In other words, he was able to accomplish that on his own as a family person. And then it's noted very nicely by you that he did work very, you know, precise, focused. And he would take supper at a certain time. And then he would take rest and get up at midnight. And in other words, he gave up sleeping in order to press on Krishna consciousness. Although you would never think that by his appearance and by his family life and you know, his profession, even for that matter, a magistrate. So it was always very impressive that he was in that kind of individual, which was probably a real, real serious renunciate. I was reading the other day in the Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada said that there's devotional service is very difficult to acquire for two reasons. Prabhupada said one reason is because one can perform devotional service for many, many, many years and still not go back to Godhead or become a pure devotee. Only when one actually develops love for Krishna can that actually happen. So you can perform devotional service for many years, but you still may not become a pure devotee of the Lord, or go even, for that matter, go back to Godhead. And then the second reason is because Krishna is very, he doesn't give himself very easily. So it appears here that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he really exhibited a person who was really a devotee, very devotional, and it's exhibited by his life. Not that he was some exceptionally, you know, renunciate, a big, powerful sannyasi or whatever. But he was definitely a pure devotee of the Lord who actually loved Krishna, especially Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu.
Jai, very nice, yes. Something else? Such as Mahaprabhu?
It is mentioned that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is considered to be like the seven Goswami. And also, he's a Nitya Siddha devotee. Very difficult to be understood by ordinary men. One time, one of the contemporaries, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, came to visit him, and they have a conversation, and he was trying to say to Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj that he knew Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but he was diminishing his, he was putting him in the mundane platform. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta got really angry at him, and he says, "You never knew Bhaktivinoda. He says, what do you mean I never knew? I was with him. I talked with him. We shared. He says, you never knew Bhaktivinoda, the real Bhaktivinoda. So that's the position of the Nitya Siddhi. The only pure devotee can understand him. One time, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta was a child, he came to one of the sadhus came to see Srila Bhaktivinoda and Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, and he saw that he was putting his feet on the head of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Oh, he was paying his obeisances like that, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, to the sadhu, and then he was like, he's close to his feet. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, at that time a child, he admonished him. And he was bold. He says, your son is very bold. He told to Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Because he says, you don't know who he is? You don't know who he is. Like saying, you know, how you dare to give blessings to my father. It is also mentioned that Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj used to regard his father not just as a father, but as a guru also. He was like his Shiksha guru. And he will take him to different places, to pilgrimage places, to instruct him how to uplift, how to learn about the different holy pastimes of the Lord Gauranga. And later on, he instructed him to preach Sudha Bhakti. Sudha Bhakti. He also wanted him to develop Mayapur. Mayapur. And so on, so many other things. So I want to just leave the microphone to somebody else.
Yeah, so just to reader, one thing that you mentioned about not being able to understand. That's why we have to be extremely careful. We have so many examples that you don't know who a devotee is necessarily just by the external situation. Srila Prabhupada's own case, you know, the majority of us, if not all of us, God brothers had no idea who he was. So it's a warning to us that always is better to err on the side of being wrong than to offend somebody. It's better. It's not bad if you think somebody's pure and they're not. It's worse if you think they're not pure and they are. See the point? Sometimes we think, oh, well, what if I'm considering this person to be pure and they're not? So what? What have you lost? By being too respectful? There's no such thing as being too respectful. Better to be respectful and the person not yet be. Because by nature, again, we have to always remind ourselves, everybody's pure. It's just different degrees of coverings of the moons of material nature. And Krishna, being the Supreme Personality of God, it can withdraw those coverings at any moment. So that person who yesterday, and this is what we run into in our society nowadays, people 30 or 40 years down the road, they're remembering, but I remember him when he was Bhakta Joe and he used to do this and so what? Does that mean that he's still, you know, he's not Bhakta Joe anymore? He's been practicing the devotional service for 30 years. He just may be a pure devotee. It's quite possible. And what if he's not and you're wrong and you treat him too respectfully? So what? It's better to be too respectful than not respectful enough, because if he is a pure devotee and you offend him, it's going to slow down your progress. So I just can't repeat that too often. In our society, because the personalities out there, and I see it every day on the internet, every day I'm monitoring the internet for questions or in a class, and there are individuals that get on there and they're always blaspheming the ISKCON devotees. ISKCON leaders especially are always blaspheming them and trying to shake the faith of those who are following them. You know, what? For what? What profit? What do you have to... If somebody sees their guru as being pure and in your mind he's not, so what? What is it taking from you? What are you losing? If this individual is seeing his or her guru as being a pure devotee and you don't think he or she is, what are you losing? Why do you have to always constantly agitate and bother the devotees? For what profit? So this is really a serious matter. It is better to see all of the gurus in ISKCON, to see all of the devotees in ISKCON as being pure devotees. What do you have to lose? And if they're not, you haven't lost anything. You're still who you are. But these individuals, they want to shake up and shake down and tear down ISKCON, because in a society where anything goes, then they become prominent. See, as long as there's firm leadership over ISKCON, they're like, they can't do anything. But if they can shake everybody's faith and shake the institution down, tear it down, then they can become prominent. That's the whole motive behind what they're doing. So don't be fooled. Don't be instigated into Vaishnava Parad. It's not that Krishna is only upset when we offend pure devotees. He's upset when you offend anybody. Anyone. We learn that now from this hellish planet section that we're in the fifth canto. Just even the slight thing of not receiving a guest properly is sinful. And one can go to hell for that. He didn't say not receiving a pure devotee properly. Not receiving a guest properly. Anybody. Not feeding people properly. These are sins. So what to speak of anybody who's already taken to the path of Krishna consciousness? What do you have to lose if you respect them properly? Nothing. Okay, maybe one more thing and then we can stop. Anybody else want to say something about Bhaktivedanta Thakur? Naikatma Prabhu? I know you're always full of these nice stories. Oh, Vrigapati Prabhu.
Just on that last point you're making, the whole time you were reading that biography, I was just marveling at how well written it was, and I couldn't help but remember the whole time that Achyutananda, as you mentioned there, he was a sannyasi, and now he's. I've heard that he's actually back in the association of the devotees and chanting again, but for many years he wasn't, and he was quote unquote way out there. But, it's just, you don't know who you're associating with. I mean, somebody who could write something like that way back in 1970 and 1972, they obviously had some sort of special relationship with Prabhupada. There's something's there. I mean, it's more than just mundane intelligence and, you go off track. And it's just an indication. We don't know who people are.
It's common sense. It's just like we're all here in the material world. It doesn't mean that we're a different class of souls from the other souls. No, actually, there's only one class of soul. Everybody's eternally Krishna's part and parcel. By free will, we come here. So similarly, by free will, when we take to the process of devotional service, we can fall back. But it doesn't mean that we never made progress. As Krishna said, wherever you stop, you're going to pick up from. That means you made some progress. And we see it repeatedly. Somebody makes progress, they fall away for some time, even a long time, and then they come back and it's almost like they never left. Because again, they pick up where they left off. So, again, what do we have to lose by respecting such personalities? Prabhupada is very appreciative. He wrote in many different places how he appreciated Chaitanya Prabhu's, saved service that he was doing. So who are we to minimize it? Yes, he may have deviated at one point, but whatever service he did for Prabhupada appreciated. And it doesn't mean that he had no realization. If somebody falls down, it doesn't mean they had no realization or they didn't make any progress. It's just, you have to be intelligent. And if somebody has fallen, then you can't follow any deviations that they may introduce. But it doesn't mean that when they were following that, whatever they did was to be discounted and, like that. Okay, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhaktivinoda ki jai.